I think the first thing to say is thank you, first to the newcomer, to those that are just starting out, that remind us and show us what we need to think about every single day, the most important things there are don't pick up. To thank the old timers, their patience, for their love and tolerance, for their respect, and of course their experience, strength, and hope. To go back to the beginning, to think about people like Hippie Dude John, may he rest in peace, and Roz, may she rest in peace as well. The two founders, co-founders of this group, and all the other old-timers that came since then that have showed us what it takes not to pick up a cigarette one day at a time. I don't think there's a possible way in words to say thank you for the gift that's about to unfold for me tomorrow. One day at a time. My quit date is May 17th, 2005. As of tomorrow, one day at a time, it'll be 10 years without a smoke for me. Part and parcel, that's why I'm speaking tonight, short of an anniversary talk, as it were. Many of you have heard so many of the things that I've spoke about, that I've offered in terms of my own experience, strength, and hope, in terms of where I've been with this thing, what it's taken from me, what has happened because of the smoking, and what's happened since I was able to put it down. I will reiterate a few of those things tonight, and hopefully I'll begin to talk a little bit more on recovery more than on where I used to be, although it's very important to remember where I come from. One thing that I will say in conjunction with the 12-step program long before I ever came to Vonner is that I was introduced at a meeting, a 12-step meeting one night, 21 years ago this August. Actually, it was 22 years ago, because 21 years ago this August, I'll be 21 years sober on that side. That's in AA I'm talking about. The individual I met taught me two things that every single living human being that I've ever come across since, both in that program and this one, have reiterated over and over and over again, ad infinitum almost. One, there's a God or a higher power, and I'm not it. That's the first one I had to get through my mind. And two, I have no control. I better realize I have no control on what other people think, do, feel, say, or whatever in their own life. I'm not God. I have to learn that what it is I need to be concerned with is what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. Otherwise, I'm the one that's going to get in trouble. We talk about the fact that an addict is a kind of an example of an extreme sense of egotism, or egoism as it were, a point of destruction that we get to, that at some point says to us and dictates to our mind, what's the use anyway? I might as well smoke. I smoked for 40 years. I make the return to my quit date real quick. On May 12, 2004, I quit the first time from smoking. I was already somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 years sober, or eight or nine years sober. On the other side, I put down the smoke for 2 weeks. I began to listen a little bit to you guys, and that was as far as it went. I went out and I smoked for another year. A little bit more than a year, because it was May 17th when I came back the second time. Many say to me, how do you remember these dates so specifically? Well, I say to myself, it's not a matter of want as much as it is need. It's absolutely necessary that I remember where I came from. If I don't remember those moments, that moment of desperation, I'm going to pick up again. I need to have that respect above all else in my life. The dignity of knowing and the understanding and comprehension that if I pick up a smoke, I'm a dead man likely. If I was still smoking, chances are I wouldn't be here. Thank you, God, for the life I had. Thank you, God, more than anything I know how to say, for 10 more years of life that maybe I shouldn't have had or wouldn't have had. That's His gift. That's His end. The gifts that come from a higher power on a daily basis are so incredible I can't even begin to mention them. When I quit drinking, I did the same thing I did in this program, except I lasted a little longer. without a drink than I did without a smoke somehow. I lasted 4 months and 3 days, and I went back out again. And the reason I remember is because I was the most cantankerous, miserable piece of work you ever want to know. Egotistical, hateful, angry, fearful, self-loathing, to the point of self-destruction physically, mentally, and spiritually. In 1994, a year and a few days after the first go, I came in and I got sober. And the reason I'm mentioning that tonight, not because I want to talk about AA in this room, because I don't, but because I need to show you the parallel with the sanity and the insanity of being an alcoholic addict, because I'm a drug addict as well, and I'm free from that since back then. But at the same time, 2 months after I quit drinking and taking drugs, in 1994, I had a lung collapse. And now begins the saga with the smoking, more than ever in my life. 97%, she said, something in that neighborhood, no air in my left lung. It collapsed on me when I went to pick up a pumpkin Halloween night. The night before Halloween. I went to stand up with it, and the whole left side went down. I went to the hospital, they took a look, the doctor said, I'll examine you again momentarily. Let me give you something to ease the pain, because I have an idea what's going on, and I'll be back. And she disappeared. A few moments later, I'm feeling better, the medication's kicking in, and I'm thinking to myself, this isn't too serious, is it? Yeah, right, what do I know? I decide to go outside and have a smoke while I'm waiting. Why not? I do it every other time, every other where. I smoke when I'm sleeping, never mind when I'm having a lung collapse. Why not? This is the insanity of the addiction of smoking. This is how powerful that insanity overtakes the mind, the body, and the soul. I went outside, I popped the cigarette out of my package, no problem, put it in my mouth, pulled out the lighter, lit it, poof, one puff, and I hit the deck face first. Never even shot a cigarette again. I don't know that I ever shot a lighter again, and I don't know if I ever shot a cigarette pack again. But I know I tried to crawl into the hospital through the sliding doors, and the first one closed on me and reopened, and I got into where the second one was, and I hit the deck again, marble floor, face first. It's amazing I didn't break my nose. Somebody screamed, somebody else came out, a couple of guys in their white outfits, the orderlies or whatever you call them, put me on a stretcher, took me inside, and that was the end of that. The doctor came out a few minutes later. She walked over to me and she said, let me guess, you went for a smoke. I'm going, duh, how did you figure that one out? A definite Einstein, this doctor, a regular rocket scientist. I'm in good company here. I'm lucky that I got someone so smart taking care of me. I'm a wise ass, is what I'm trying to say. I don't really care because I don't know how to. 2 months sober from alcohol and drugs that were killing me as well, and here I am now about to die because my lungs are going to quit because I'm a smoker. The doctor says to me, I can't give you any more meds because they won't work anyway and it'll take way too long. I'm going to examine you, and when I do, you better take whatever breath you can and you better grit your teeth because it's going to hurt. But she said, I got to, because it might be the one chance I got to save your life. She lifted my left arm and the pain was so excruciating, I have never felt anything like that in my life. I couldn't catch my breath. I'm all crumpled over so my shoulders nearly touch on my hip on the left side, or my leg outside. And she lifts the arm up again the second time, puts a stethoscope right up underneath on the rib cage, and she starts to listen, and there's nothing to listen to. She said, you've got a spontaneous pneumothorax. For all intents and purposes, your left lung is gone for the moment. Your right lung is still working, and that's the only reason we're talking. But she said, when you went out for that smoke, just like that, you could have popped the other one because all that pressure was on that one, not to mention it was compensating for the one that was down. She did what she had to do to make me comfortable. They gave me more medication, you know, on with the IV, blah, blah, blah. The next day, I was placed that night up on a floor. There was no beds on pneumothorax on the floor for the lungs. For the people with, you know, that they're dealing with that department of the body, there were no beds left. Hold up. There's been a lot of smokers in. What can I tell you? I don't know. A lot of lung issues. So they put me on another floor so medical people would be able to get to me in case of emergency. And they kept me there all night. And the next day, they checked me out. I had another incident with the same lung, but it turns out it wasn't a collapse. It was just a problem with some arthritis in between the ribs, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward, I smoke for another 10 years. I go all through all kinds of things with that. A few weeks after the lung collapse, I'm in emergency again, and this time they're giving me there's a machine hanging on the wall. And they put the mask on my face, and they drop this tablet or pill or whatever into this solution. and it comes out with a mist and a steam, and you've got to breathe that in so that you can catch your breath, because my lungs just wouldn't do the trick. By the by, over the next few years, I took other medications for my lungs, I got on a Ventolin pump, etc., etc. 10 years after my lung collapse, May 12th, I believe it was, in 2004, I put down the smoke, and it happened so easy, it was almost impossible to ever think of going back, because it was so simple. But then again, I figured if I could do that, it shouldn't be that big a deal. What was I going on about? I just had some bad luck with it. Yeah, right, tell me another one. I'm writing my own story as I go along, which is absolutely insane. Then one night, I see this lady run out on a stage on TV. Nearly bald, real short, crew-cut, brush-cut type haircut, if you guys know what I'm talking about, like we used to have in the Army. I think some of them still do. Yeah, they put a bowl on the top and cut the rest all the way around. Whatever's under the bowl is yours. The rest, and it's a tiny bowl. But at any rate, she runs out on the stage and she's yelling, "Stop the insanity!" And up on the stage in back of her is a big sign. I-N-S-A-N-I-T-Y, or however it's spelled, insanity. Stop the insanity. And I'm listening to this girl, and all of a sudden I'm starting to think, and I'm going, what in the world is she going on about? This woman's crazy. She's hooked on something. Something's wrong. But then she's talking about the desperation of what it is she's going through, and that everything that's happening is insanity. You want the definition of insanity? Smoking for 40 years, doing the same thing over and over, and expecting a different result. It don't work out that way. I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep getting what I'm getting. And there's no way around that. So after 2 weeks, it was so simple, so easy. I went back out and I had another smoke. And I smoked for another year. When I came back in 2005, I came to you guys again. I already knew about Vonner because you were up in Yahoo, my most favorite site. I love it for a browser and all that. I go up there or a search engine, whatever. And I go up there and I'm looking around and I find you guys on Yahoo and I find a couple other pages and two or three things happen real quick. One of them is I found a place that led me to you, and that place said, write down something that bothers you about your smoking. And I wrote down something along these lines. I still have never been able to find that page. I was hoping to, but it didn't work out that way. So I wrote down basically this. Lungs hurt, breathing coming hard, I don't want this anymore, I don't want to die, I quit. Something along them lines. Probably not exact, but very, very close. Something powerful and poignant like they were saying to do, and they said park it in front of you so you can see it most of the day wherever you are, so you don't forget that desperation, so you don't forget that message. You're begging for your life. Make sure that it's poignant enough that it sounds like you're begging for it, not just that you're playing a game. And so I put that in front of me, and then it gave me some other ideas about other sites, and I came to Yahoo, I found some of you guys. You guys were about to come down here to Pal Talk. Somebody mentioned a place with microphones, because they didn't have no more up there, and I mentioned something about this place, and da-da-da-da-da. They had already been searching, and the two came together, and hello. Welcome to Voices of Nicotine Recovery. One night I come into Pal Talk, because I'm doing my AA meeting, and what do I see in the list of addictions? You got it. Vonner, another home. And I came in here a very short time after this group started. I mean, the group is 10 years and change old, and I'm almost 10 years sober, so I've been here almost since the beginning. Not quite, a little ways off. But if you consider the first quit, I've been here since before, since right at the beginning, pretty much. And I followed a lot of you. I've watched the people who've gone back out again and who've died as a result of smoking. I watched two of the dearest friends in my life, mentor, teacher, friend, spiritual advisor, who was like a father, a brother to me, and probably the greatest friend I would have ever known, and he died of cancer. And I'll tell you what's strange. Me, I'm lucky because I had a couple of real good friends like that. The other one died also 5 years later with cancer as well, almost exactly the same way. And he died at least as painful, if not more so, except with one difference. One was in the hospital with meds, the other was at home. And I think the strongest med he had was whatever he had handy that he could get from the pharmacy. He didn't want to see a doctor, period. The friend, the second one that died, was a friend of mine for over 30 years. Walked to walk in the 12-step program on the other side. And by and large, he's one of the leaders that showed me how to get sober and free from alcohol and drugs. When I was a young boy, my uncle used to say to me, if you go through life from the day you're born to the day you die and you find one person, just one, who knows all your good, your bads, and your uglies, who loves you despite that, or even because of that, and loves you truly, then you have a very, very special friend, and they're very few and far between. If you've got one, you're a very lucky individual. I've had at least those two and more that I can name, that I place in the same kind of category. These two are extremely special. These are old timers. These are people who have been around a while. I mention these two guys tonight, thinking about a whole lot of other old timers when I do mention them. And I think about these things. What I described to you and what I went through in the torture with the smoke, the breathing, not being able to get up the stairs. Two, maybe three stairs, and I got to stop. Now I can walk across the room and back and I'm not out of breath. Now I can do a little exertion and it's not so bad, not so painful, not so powerful. One day I made a decision, May 17, 2005, that I wanted to stop smoking. It was 5 or 6 years later that somebody in this room mentioned the reason why, or what that point was that I came to, that I wanted to quit smoking just a little bit more than I wanted to smoke, even just a little bit more. Not a lot, not a whole bunch, just a little bit more. But there's some other things that need to be a little bit too. They don't need to be in great force. But they need to be there because without them I'm a dead man and cannot stay free. They are three items, A, B, and C. One is honesty. Two is open-mindedness. And three is willingness. Some guy named Herbert Spencer, I don't even have a clue who he is, don't ask me, I don't know, but you'll find him online, said these three things are indispensable to strong character, to a decent life. They don't have to be in great measure, period. No one ever said they did. But to have a little bit of each comes by working the steps, by trying to be honest, open-minded, and willing to do step one, two, and three, surrender, admit and accept the fact that I'm an addict, step one, right after the surrender, or at some point after. Step two, coming to believe over a period of time, and that isn't in 5, 10, 20 minutes. I don't believe it's possible. But coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Step three, make a decision. There's no action there. There's nothing. I haven't even got the cup of coffee in front of me yet. I make a decision to make a cup of coffee. I haven't gone in the kitchen, put the water in the pot, the coffee in the pot, the filter in the pot so the coffee's not all over everywhere, put a cup under it so the water's not everywhere. I haven't done any action yet. All I'm doing is making a decision at step three. To turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. However, long before I got there, when I first surrendered and I found my knees almost 10 years ago tonight, I was broken and beaten, and when I came out of the hospital, I wasn't sufficiently there yet. It took one more shot. I had had an x-ray, and they told me that my lung had a spot or something, or it was misconstrued that that belief was there, but it was him, me, or a combination. I really don't care. It doesn't matter. It worked. And that's all I needed. When I went outside, I still went to reach for a smoke. The pack was empty. I flipped it into the garbage, and I reached inside my jacket pocket for the second pack, because I always had a backup when I could. I couldn't afford them most of the time, but I got them cheaper, you know, the ways we buy them, and rollies, and whatever way. But here's what happened. I reach for the second package, and I get a shock off the plastic, the cellophane, whatever you call it, around the package. And so I withdraw my hand, I put my two hands in front of me, and all in one action, just like that, I said to my higher power, under my breath, don't let me smoke, please. I'll make the prayer as soon as I get home. I could pray anywhere, I know that. I just didn't have my wits about me, but I knew I was desperate. For the first time in my life, I wasn't afraid anymore. I wasn't scared and so full of fear, I didn't know what I was doing. I was desperate. Because I didn't really want that smoke. Even twice I tried for it, empty pack and a full pack, and neither one of them could I get. Because I wasn't meant to. And I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but for some strange reason, I carried that pack of cigarettes in the inside of that coat pocket for another year before I finally got rid of it. And when I did get rid of it, I planned in my mind to give it away to sell it, all these things. And finally, I crumpled it up and I threw it in the garbage can one night with busted butt, and I left it there and I walked away. But that night, I walked from that clinic all the way back up to the house. It took me a while to get here. And when I got here, I went into the bedroom, I fell down on my knees, and I said to my higher power, please take away the desire. I can't do this anymore. All those years ago, I asked you for the same gift from alcohol and drugs, and you gave it to me. And you know I'm grateful for it. You know I do all I can to try and stay away from it. And I've been free to prove that. Whatever precious little gratitude that is, at least I try to show that. Please, do the same with this. I don't want it anymore. Let me give it to you. And that night on my knees, he took the desire for smoking away. I got up from the bed. I really didn't feel so much different. There wasn't a big blast. It wasn't anything specifically like it was 10 years before that when I stopped the alcohol and drugs. That was a whole other ball of wax, and it was different, maybe because I was meant to have it unfold that way. I can't even discuss that because I really don't know. I can tell you what happened, which I won't take the time with here tonight in this room, but if ever you want to know, I'll tell you. On May 17th, I began a new life when it came to the smoking, and it came piecemeal, little bit by little bit by little bit. The people in this room, they kept saying over and over again, walk the first step. You can't get a mile without that. You can't get a block without that. You can't get to the next door without that. One step, that's all you need to take. I've already surrendered, and now I'm working on step one, admitting and accepting the fact that I'm a nicotine addict and I don't want this thing no more. Neither do I need it. That came a little bit later. Coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity is to me almost a kind of an asinine thought in a way, because here's the deal for me. I told you I was sober and free from the other two items for a lot of years before I got free from the smoking. So why couldn't I put down the smoking? Was it that much more difficult? Well, the idea in my room, the idea in my mind was that the addiction was so strong that the truth of what everybody was trying to pump into me to make me believe it was tougher to quit smoking than it was, you know, drugs and alcohol, I began to believe. I began to swallow that like a good old cold glass of water on a hot day. Gone three gulps of a tumbler with a half a quart in it. I was swallowing that crap like you wouldn't believe, because it isn't true. I don't believe that. I don't believe that crap for a minute. I believe what I got in between my ears is telling me that I cannot or will not smoke, or will not stop smoking. I'll keep smoking as long as I want to. That was my attitude. I don't care what it does. And I certainly didn't care about the people about me when I smoked. My family, I go home and I watch my mother choking on the stuff, and still I smoke for another little while. Not long, but a while in the house. I'm only home for a couple of weeks. The next year when I went down, I said to them, I'll go and smoke outside. Dad said, no, go in the basement, light a candle. It won't affect her so badly because you'll be in the basement. I tried that. I felt bad. I couldn't do it. I went outside and I smoked. I didn't feel bad enough for me, though, because I kept on smoking. But you see, here's the difference in the things, the way that they happened over the next few years from the time I put down the smoking. I begin to listen to people tell me how to work the steps. I've already discussed with you just now in a very short moment what the first three steps are. Now I'm going to describe the rest, hopefully as quickly as I can, but in at least some kind of a form that hopefully even the newcomer that's in this room tonight or someone who's having a rough time might be able to pick up on. Because my thought and my gift today is that if I can help someone, just one person, to somehow make that decision to put it down and begin to leave it down one day at a time, then I'm happy camper. That's what I ask for. I can't do much more than that. I can't help you quit smoking. I can't give you that gift. That comes from a higher power and a willingness and a desire within you to want to finally live something different in the way of a good life. And you can do it. I know you can. If I can quit, anyone can. Step four, beginning the action, getting honest with myself. The crap that's going on inside of me that's conning me. The belief that it's harder to quit that than anything else, right? The idea that, you know, all the stuff they're pumping in and the added nicotine, blah, 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 and I want to use this and that and the other thing, And all of a sudden, at the very beginning, I'm confronted with people who are still using nicotine after 2 or 3 years or 4 years of recovery. Not my business. Let them do what they want. The reason I speak of it is because it is my business in this sense. And that is that I know if I was still taking nicotine in any source right now, 2, 3, 4 years down the line, why bother to quit smoking? Nicotine is addictive. Nicotine is what keeps me addicted to the rest, to keep me smoking cigarettes one day at a time or take me back because of the insanity between my ears. That's my viewpoint, my opinion. I don't say that you shouldn't use gum, that you shouldn't use sprays, that you shouldn't use whatever it is necessary, patches, to help you wean yourself off of smoking. Because here's the fact. Mine didn't come like this either. And I would never say that it did. Back there on May 17th, I had an appointment a couple of days before that with my family doctor. And he didn't know that this other stuff had unfolded. But what he said to me at that appointment at his doctor's office was, when we're done here today, go up front and make another appointment with the nurse or the secretary and make it for about 3 months from now, 2.5, 3 months. By that time, all the rest of the tests will be in. We'll be fine. You'll have another appointment. For now, we've done pretty much what we can to upgrade your health and to, you know, upgrade the testing and all the rest of that. And he said, while you're doing that, think about this, would you? And this was on the walk from his office out to the front, which took about 9 seconds. He said, try and cut your smoking in half by the time we meet again. I said, okay. Just like that, and I walked away. Right. Cut it in half. That chance of that happening. But then again, who knows? I came back to see him in 3 months, and guess what? I didn't cut it in half. I quit. I said, what happened? Don't ask me. I just explained to you how it happened. I quit. I was done. I didn't want to smoke. I walked into his office, and he said, so how's it going? Because you cut it in half. And I said, well, I done a little better than that. And he said, how's that? I said, I quit. He said, you what? You did what? I said, I quit. He said, you quit smoking? I said, yeah, I'm done. Been a while now. I told him the days. It was a few days. He said, you haven't had one cigarette? I said, no, not one. He said, how the hell did you do that? I said, well, sort of the same thing I did with the drinking and the alcohol. And he said, how's that? I said, well, I listened to you, number one. Number two, I prayed. And number three, I don't pick it up today. I just don't want to smoke today. He said, well, I wish you luck on it. I don't know how long it'll last that way, but you keep going. If you're doing what you're doing and you're getting what you're getting, it must be working. And so that's when I came back to you and I began to work the program here and the steps in this program. See, what I forgot was, even though they're very similar, this program along with the other one that I work, they're not identical. No, they're not. The substance is different, number one. Many people say a drug is a drug is a drug. Sorry, not true. Not quite. Almost, though. The premise is the same. And by the way, what I'm sharing with you tonight is my own opinion, my own viewpoint, that which I've been through and experienced, that which I live every day. And where I'm at today, which I'm about to bring you up on very quickly. Step four gives me a pattern and an idea and an experience that comes from others that shows me what I need to do to get the resentment, the anger, the hate, and the fear down on paper and show me what I need to do to correct it. I am not doing anything about amends yet because that's not what step four calls for. Step four calls for cleaning up the wreckage of the past. It talks about getting busy with self, making a fearless, thorough, fearless moral inventory, meaning my own crap, not yours. Because what you do, you know, your action is your karma. My action is my karma. I heard that online and I love it because that's exactly what it is. Whatever I do, whatever the return I get on what I do is, that's my return. And they won't change unless I change. If I'm doing positive, I'll get positive. If I'm doing negative, I'll get negative. Moving on to step five, once I got things in a little bit of an order so I have an idea what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, how it affects me, what's going on in my mind, my body, and my soul. Then I get on to step five with my character defects, and I admit them. No big deal. And then I begin to accept them by the time I get on to, my mistake. Step five, I got ahead of myself. Step five, admitting to myself, to my higher power and another human being, the exact nature of my wrong. Why? Because I need the threefold solution. And it all comes down to this package. I'm going to make it real simple as far as step five goes. Hope you like this. I do. A great deal. I went to my sponsor, the very first one I had, when I was 3 months sober, and I said, why do I got to keep praying and doing all this stuff? Incidentally, it's kind of humorous now that I think about it. I did the same thing when I stopped smoking, but it's okay. I went to my sponsor and I said, what exactly is the reason why I need to keep praying to my higher power like this? I mean, he knows what's in my heart. He knows what he built me. I'm in his image. You know, the whole package. Yada, yada, yada. So why does he need to hear this every day and every night and every morning and every afternoon? And my sponsor chuckled a little knowing smile, and he looked at me eyeball to eyeball, and this is what he said. He doesn't need to hear it. Now I'm really ticked. And I go, so then why in hell am I doing it? He said, good question. Thank you for asking. Here's the answer. Because you need to hear it. That's why I do step five, because I need to hear it. I need to admit it to another human being that I'm wrong. I need to admit to my higher power I'm wrong. But most importantly, I need to admit to me I'm wrong. Why? I'll show you in a minute. Step six, my shortcomings. Admitting them. Step seven, accepting them. And ask for my higher power to take away that which stands in the way of whatever I'm trying to do that's positive in the light of my higher power working through me. Because whatever my higher power does through me shines, radiates, other people see the action. The blah blah is bullshit. Excuse my language, but it's true. I could talk all day and all night here. Many of you know that. But doing the action, that's another matter. That's my own truth. But if I do the action and other people see that, they know it's real. And they'll gravitate to that. That's why step five says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, something along them lines. I don't know the exact text in this program, but it's the same basis with all of them. If you want what I've got, then either you come to me and say, what did you do? How did you get that? Well, I did this, this, and this. Okay. For me, it wasn't complicated. I came to meetings. I didn't shake hands with people because you can't do that online, but I did it face-to-face meetings. I made coffee. I did whatever I had to do. And I didn't pick up today. Six and seven, the shortcomings. Now I've humbly admitted them to my higher power and asked them to take them away. Because whatever's in the way that I'm saying to you, I'm doing this, this, and this, and I'm not, is blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit, and it's killing me when I try to work with another human being, because the first thing another human being is going to say or do, if I say don't smoke and I got a smoke in my hand, you know what he's going to say? Bullshit, don't bother me with your garbage sign. Goodbye. Or he'll use some language that might be a little stronger. I've seen it, done it, and lived it. That's how I know that. Now, step eight. Making a list of persons, people that I harmed and, you know, went crazy about and did things wrong to, and then step nine, making those direct amends. And that's where that step five comes back in again, because making those amends is not only making them to myself, making them to another human being, it's making them to my higher power, the threefold package, so that I'm fresh and clean all the way around. It's not talking about cleaning up one room of the house. It's talking about cleaning up the wreckage of the past. Cleaning up my own junk and my own garbage so I don't got to live with that. I said to my sponsor one day, what is the depth of your honesty? What does it matter to you what your honesty is? And he said, if I can live with it, it's semi-honest. He said, if I can't, it's not honest at all. And he said, even if I can live with it and it's semi-honest, I work every day of my life, and that's why I have a 12-step program to improve that honesty. It's called a spiritual growth. The program is a spiritual program based on a religious background. It's a spiritual program one day at a time, showing us what to do to have a decent life that doesn't have a place in it to pick up a smoke. 10. Taking step 4 over and over and over again. There's only one step 4. It's called step 4. Right after 3 and right before step 5. Step 10. How we go about continuing to take the personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. But there's more. It's not just admitting I'm wrong. It's a matter of trying to correct that behavior if you can. I'll be the first one to sit here and tell you sometimes I make the same mistakes over and over again because I'm such a shithead, such a putz someday, and I'll admit it. I'll be the first to admit that. I'm not perfect, and neither would I ever say I am. I have a message that I try to convey to you based on what I have in my life today as a result of walking the walk that leads me down the path of the 12-step program from beginning to wherever it will end someday down the road. Thank you, God, hopefully not too soon. It is one hell of a journey. Step 11, getting closer and closer and closer in the reiteration of that conscious contact with my higher power. To be close to Him and to get closer and closer, to be more honest, to be more open-minded, to be more willing each day, just a tiny little bit more, to change a little tiny bit more, and the accumulation shows itself by whatever the end result is. And step 12, having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And it doesn't stop there. That's not enough. Not even close. It goes on to talk about carrying this message to other sufferers, other nicotine addicts, and to not pick it up ourselves, basically. To keep on staying free by doing all of that, by working with someone else to offer them the benefit of your own experience and to show them that it's possible. It's not only possible, it's a reality to quit smoking if you want to do the work to quit smoking. Dream about it. Wish it. Desire it. Long for it. Yearn for it. Plead for it. Beg for it. It ain't going to happen. But I'll tell you what. Pick up a mop. Excuse me. Mop the floor. Make coffee at a meeting. Do something to help another human being. Go down to the mall and open a door for somebody. Not quite enough, but it's a start. It's a beginning to show you what action you need to take. Offer to do a reading in the room. Offer to do what you can to help. And if you think that I'm perfect and I got all this thing down and I'm doing well, I'm going to finish up tonight by going this route. A gentleman in this room, and I'm not even going to mention his name because it's not necessary, way back at the beginning, said to me, it is important to come a little bit earlier rather than later because it doesn't look good, it doesn't show the walk, and it takes away from that which we're trying to do to show credibility in the room. And he was correct, 100%. I believe that. And you know what the proof of it was? In the first program I entered, my sponsor said half an hour before, half an hour after. Why? Because here's the credibility of the program. Getting phone numbers or people's names in this room, clicking on them, add them to your buddy list, get a sponsor, someone you can run something by before you make a bad decision and put yourself in a jackpot for no reason, a little defense before the offense, before you have to go and do what the government does on an often basis, pardon me for bringing politics into it, which I won't too much, but to say this, to do damage control, we don't have to do that if we do the steps first. There might still be a little bit because we're not perfect. What we are is a group of people who work on a progressive level to get better a little bit at a time. The final note is we are not evil people or bad people trying to get good. No, we're not. For sick people trying to get well. And how we do that? One hand in the hand of an old timer, one hand in the hand of a newcomer, and we stand and we walk in the eyes of a higher power. In his glory, and the praise is on him. There's absolutely no way around that for me. My final note tonight, I want to say to you, thank you for allowing me to share tonight on the eve of my 10th anniversary in Bonner. To say thank you, I don't know how. To say thank you for 10 years of life that I probably or maybe wouldn't have. I don't know how to say thank you except to keep coming back and offering whatever the best of me is at this point. To say to you, please keep on walking the walk with us. Allow me to keep walking the walk with you. Allow me to still be here to try and carry some kind of message and to pick up from you and learn more so I can carry an even stronger message day by day, one day at a time. And finally, to my higher power, thank you for answering my prayer, for always being there and never turning your back on me, even though I walked away so many times. It should never even be like that. But it is because I'm human. Thank you for the people that have come into my life and for the gift of my life and my freedom. And thank you, hopefully, if I make it until tomorrow night, in a few hours, I'll be 10 years free, one day at a time. God bless you. Thank you, Vonda, for being here. And thank you for my life and my freedom. Thank you, guys, for allowing me to share. I'm so grateful to be here. I love every one of you. God bless you. Stop smoking. It's not worth it.